Okay, this is a great idea, but what problem are you trying to solve? Because so many people have millions of ideas. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to become this. But why and what problem are you trying to solve? And really getting to the core of that and understanding, all right, so you've been doing recruitment to date. You are disenfranchised with the large consultancies and you think you could do it better. And you want to create these really powerful teams of best in industry. So you run an associate model. You know how to hire those people. You know how to get those key people into the business. Great. You deploy them on a project. And then the missing piece, you have to then understand what's that value stream look like and where's the missing piece? Well, the missing piece for that business was there was no wrapper around ownership for the business around what was happening on the client side.
Welcome to the Unlearn Podcast, where host Barry O'Reilly seeks to synthesize the superpowers of extraordinary individuals to think big, start small, and learn fast. Here's your host, Barry O'Reilly.
Welcome to the Unlearn Podcast. On this show, I'm delighted to be joined by Rene Hawkins, founder of A-Curve. Now, Rene is a technology and transformational practitioner with over 25 years of business building and operations. She's a passion for optimizing organizations via organizational design, culture, and leadership development, as well as all the data-driven operations you need to align supply and demand for hyper-growth companies. We worked together at ThoughtWorks, where she was a senior executive who went through every stage of the startup story, from early stage to scale up an eventual IPO of that business. She then went on to help a recruitment company pivot their entire business model towards professional services. And today, she works as a fractional COO available for hire to help scaling businesses reach their maximum potential. She's won the Woman of the Year Award in 2021 for Women in Technology and worked in the US, North America, Europe, India, China, Hong Kong, and Singapore, as well as being a mother of two and passionate advocate for inclusivity. In short, it's been a pleasure working with her over many years, and I'm excited to have her on the show to share her own story. So let's get started about where it began for her.
Joining ThoughtWorks and working alongside Roy Singham and being challenged by him just to think about not just the work you're doing, but about society was the game changer for me. And I think it flipped me. I was always, strong in my project management and leadership skills, but it made me think more about the humane approach and about inclusivity and, how society isn't always equal and how do you try to create equality within your organization? How do you motivate people? So that was probably the biggest change for me was Roy's influence, which he'll be proud of.
Well, for many people now who they may have heard of ThoughtWorks, but they might know who Roy, the CEO and founder of the company is. You were obviously someone who joined that company very, very early. So for listeners who mightn't be familiar with him, maybe share just a little bit about this character that, a character is literally an understatement for this guy.
It is, yeah. So Roy is an incredibly passionate individual who can see the lens of the world of injustice, and he wants to make a big change in the world about injustice. And he started ThoughtWorks, 30-something years ago, with the idea that if you just put a bunch of real smart people in the room with the right attitude, aptitude, and integrity, they could do anything and solve problems, which I thought was amazing. And we had people at ThoughtWorks from all different backgrounds that created a company that, 30 years on is now $1 billion plus revenue, public on the NASDAQ. It's a pretty impressive journey. But at the core of ThoughtWorks, he had this vision that you could run a business and be profitable, but also give back to society. So there was a large social justice lens that ThoughtWorks had. And I thought that was really important. Well, I learned later in life it was important because, when you go to work every day, you want to be working for something and someone that has a purpose. And that was Roy. But his character was the one that would stand up in the middle of a table in the room and be like, "All you fools are privileged people. And, you need to check your privilege at the door." And that was Roy. He was a character, but he allowed us to think differently. And I think that was really important and something that
so true.
My career, yeah.
Yeah, like I, for me personally as well, I remember walking into that company the first day and, you know, you sort of have this induction. There's no offices. There's just a bunch of open tables in a room. You're sitting down at a table. You don't know whether you're sitting beside an intern or a CEO. It's this very flat structure. There was no managers. I still remember asking people if I need to go on holidays, who do I tell? And they say, no, you just take a holiday. I was like, it just felt like there was so many counterintuitive notions about how a business should or could be run. But yeah, again, it opened my eyes to so many different possibilities, right? So for you, as you sort of, you got to grow up in this thing, right? In this type of environment, which was very, as you say, purpose-led, thoughtful, but you also had to take a lot of responsibility for how you want to grow as a person and how you would improve yourself in your work. So what were some of the things you had to, I don't even know if unlearn is the right word, as you might sometimes say, like, got to figure this stuff out, like learn it, unlearn it, relearn it all again. So as you sort of started out on, you know, what were some of the things that sort of you really started to strike you on your journey in this space?
I think one of the things I always had thought in my mind was that to be a leader, you had to have all the answers and you had to, you know, be the one steering the ship and knowing what direction to travel, and you knew it all. And that's not true, right? A leader is actually, at least the type of leader I am, is more of a servant leader in the sense of how do I create the space for the people that I work with to do the best work that they're doing? And how do we do that whilst satisfying our clients, right? And making those two worlds meet. So an example of that is, it's quite a funny story. So we had something called a learning and development budget, personal development budget. And it was a certain amount of money per year and you could use it on whatever you really wanted. I mean, people went and did yoga retreats. I get the funniest things that people wanted to tell me, like, this will help me improve my development because I'm getting that Zen feeling or that mindfulness. It's like, yeah, whatever. But a real popular one was Web Summit in Lisbon, because who doesn't want to go on a jolly to Lisbon on company time and money, right?
It's one of my favorite cities in Europe. Like, even with my training budget, I managed to go to South by Southwest in Austin, which was pretty amazing experience at the time. It was a tech conference. I swear, Rene, I swear it was a good use of my time.
And I think most of them were. The challenge was that as a business, Web Summit became more and more popular because it was nearby. I think the tickets were free, so people could use their budget for the travel and accommodation and the rest of the trip. And so we ran into a challenge where we had 1 year, 50 people sign up for a professional services business. When you have 50 people go off for 2 days in the middle of a month, your utilization plummets, and that's how you get your revenue and your profitability for the month. So it was a bit of a challenge. We made a decision, you know, at the leadership team that we were going to, you know, stop the number of people going to conferences. And there was a big pushback from the people on the ground, from thought workers, which was right. I definitely suspected that was going to happen. We held a couple of sessions to understand what people thought. And in retrospect, you know, what we should have done was go to them and say, here's the problem. Here's the challenge that we have. What are your ideas to help us solve the problem? So we didn't have to have an answer. We didn't have the best answer. And instead of making a decision behind closed doors and then saying, oh, here's this policy change, why don't we bring the people in the room that have some of the best minds in industry and help them help us solve the problem? And, you know, I think we did a lot more of that, actually. After the back of that example, we started to create a group of people who would come together and advise us on some of the things that we were thinking of in the future, which I think was really powerful.
Yeah, it's, you know, the instant thing I think of when I hear you say that is context versus control. The motion of giving people context about, well, the maybe unintended consequences of their actions that they're not aware of. As a senior executive of a company, you're obviously looking at a whole different set of information. You've got metrics that you're measured on, how the business is performing, and you're thinking about it, where often maybe contributors might not understand that. But it's really interesting to hear you even talk a little bit about doing sort of customer discovery as well with employees, and like understanding, you know, what are their needs? Why do they want to go to this? What's inspiring that? Like 25% of the office, like going to this one event, like, is there something that is missing already? Putting that context to people, to helping them actually make choices themselves, is a really powerful, you know, management technique as well. So like, how else have you put that into practice over time? Because I think that's something that is hard for people to trust in. If you say, like, if I give people the information, will I trust them to make the right decision? Or if they have more context, you know, will they choose something that is reasonable. How do you sort of take that first step? Because most people probably never do that a lot or think to do that.
Well, I think it starts with a bit of education. I know that probably sounds a bit silly, but I remember Aaron Cummins is the CFO of ThoughtWorks, and there was a leadership development program that we ran. And she came to the leadership development program and presented this really amazing click-through presentation around, like, how does finance work and how does ThoughtWorks make money? And I was mind-blown by it because I didn't understand how the whole business worked. You know, ThoughtWorks is a huge machine. There's different regions, and really just kind of understanding the basics was really powerful for me. So when I was moving into leadership roles, it was about that education piece. Similarly, I was talking about the utilization impact of the learning and development budget. We had Friday lunch and learns, and I did a lunch and learn around utilization and, like, what does it mean and how do you calculate it and what impacts utilization? And again, you know, you have to find the right balance of, you feel you've given enough information, you've hired the right people through your hiring process, you've got a good culture, and then you have to have that trust for people to make the right decision. And occasionally things are going to go wrong, but with education, with the right hiring practices, and with your culture, it's going to be far and few between that you have some of those missteps, and those are probably pretty easy to course correct.
Yeah, no, it's great. But, like, there's subtle things you're saying there, right? Like constantly communicating to people, like having a space like a lunch and learn where people can come along with their lunch and learn about business topics that matter to the company and why you're making such decisions. Like, one of the things I think is always hard when you're in a bigger company as well, even in small companies, is decisions come down with no context, right? Like, we're not opening in this market, we're opening in another one, or we're not building that feature, we're building a different one. And, you know, you just sort of pick your head up from your desk and go, well, hang on, the plan was that we were creating a shopping cart, and now this week I have to do a search algorithm. Like, what the hell's going on here? Like, management don't know what they're doing, you know? But really, it's like this idea of the context isn't getting pushed down, right? So you've obviously helped internally massive consultancies now, like ThoughtWorks, do that. You've also helped clients do that. So what are some of the other little tricks you would have for people in those leadership positions about how they can keep bringing people to understanding about what's going on in companies and how the impacts of what they're doing, how they sort of show up and affect the company?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think storytelling is an essential skill for any leader, senior leader. You need to be able to tell a story, and facts and figures, important. Connecting the dots and helping an employee understand, a lot goes into a decision for any organization. So that ability to step back and create, you know, show the big picture and explain, okay, well, yes, this decision may seem like there wasn't a lot of thought in it, but actually this is the reason why. I think that's incredibly helpful. Really strong communication strategy. So I had worked very closely with a comms manager. We created something called the Friday Anything Briefing. And when you're working in a remote setting in, like, a ThoughtWorks organization, and you have encouraged clients to use this as well, you can't force people to read their email. You can't force people to do anything. You know, you can have an internal system that maybe broadcasts, but still people don't read it. So you have to find a way in which people know that that is the place to go for the information every week. We had this, you know, weekly Friday Anything Briefing, and I would send it out every Friday morning, and people would read it with a cup of coffee, and it became habitual, and it had all of the important information you needed to know, and fun things as well, like celebrating teams and celebrating people. And it was the one-stop shop. It was the way to communicate to thought workers. You know, town halls or all hands meetings, those never really had the same number of people engaging as did this Friday Anything Briefing, because it was a bit of fun as well as a business update. So comms is important.
Yeah, no, it's so important, right? You're getting me thinking as well, especially in remote global teams, doing the all hands on, you know, midday in London, great for people in London, right? But if you're in New York or you're here in Manila, that's an 8 p.m. call for me, or it's like a 4 a.m. call for, like, people in on the West Coast, right? So it's this idea, though, of, like, the powerful technology of writing never fails to, like, save the day and get it out there, is because people can do it asynchronously, right? Like, it's on their time. As you say, if you put something out like that, it's something that they can digest over their coffee, over their breakfast, over whatever suits them. Maybe it's like, you know, they prefer to read in the evening, but it's a super powerful way to do this. You did phenomenal work, obviously, in ThoughtWorks about growing that company. You're part of taking it through an IPO, which is just mind-boggling to me when I think about when joining the company, and like there's like a couple of hundred people floating around the whole globe, never mind thousands that there are today.
Yeah.
But since then, you've been really starting to work with lots of different types of companies, right? And help them sort of scale up their businesses and be successful. And many of them necessarily didn't start off as the companies that they were trying to evolve into, like changing business models, changing focus, which has always been fascinating to me, right? Like helping one of the more recent companies you were working with was actually a recruitment company, but they've turned into a professional services organization, right? And innovating that. So I'm always fascinated about how you take companies through these massive pivots, because they are extremely hard, especially if these companies have existed for, you know, a period of time, or they've sort of locked themselves into behaviors that are associated with being a recruiter versus being actually a provider of like professional services organization. So tell us like some of the fun things you've learned about helping businesses go through these like massive pivots, not just in like their target customer, but their whole operating model and business model and everything that goes with it.
Absolutely. One of the things I always question is, okay, this is a great idea, but what problem are you trying to solve? Because so many people have millions of ideas. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to become this. But why? And what problem are you trying to solve? And really getting to the core of that and understanding, all right, so you know, you've been doing recruitment to date. You are disenfranchised with the large consultancies and you think you could do it better. And you want to create these really powerful teams of best in industry. So you run an associate model. You know how to hire those people. You know how to get those key people into the business. Great. You deploy them on a project. And then the missing piece, you have to then understand what's that value stream look like and where's the missing piece? Well, the missing piece for that business was there was no wrapper around ownership for the business around what was happening on the client side. There was a super high degree of trust with the associates that were on the ground, but no feedback mechanism back into the business. So it was more about, oh, we've got teams, they're delivering outcomes, and we're getting paid and we're getting a better margin because we're not just doing recruiting, we're doing outcomes and teams now. What the missing piece was when you unpeeled the onion was that one of delivery and technical quality ownership. So how do you then create a wrapper around that? So just break down, what problem are you trying to solve? What's the value stream to get there? Where are the missing pieces? And then you go fix the problem. I mean, it sounds very simple, and I suppose it does when you have hindsight. But when you're in the thick of it, you forget, you know, about that. And also, I think one of the things that that business did really well was ask for help. They knew that they didn't know tech consultancy. They knew that they didn't understand how to run a professional services business. So they bring someone like myself in to bring that years of expertise into their business and help them understand how to reshape and how to break down some of the silos internally as well that were created around operating what you would consider a traditional business. And I'm applying the dog food metaphor of like eat your own dog food. Of, all right, if you want to become a more agile business and you want to become a technology consultancy, what do you have to change internally as well? And so we realigned all the internal functions to think about client. So the client was the primary focus and everybody was wrapped around that, which was pretty cool change.
Yeah, no, it is. With people who know how to do this stuff, they often say, yeah, it's obvious. You just have to do these four steps like you did there. But most people are like, what the hell? How do we do that? So just some of the things to pull out from there is like really fascinating to me. Like one is even just as you're describing, like a recruitment business, you're certainly moving people in a way, right? Like it's you're finding talent and you're placing talent. And that's sort of the end of your story in some respects, right? Like the responsibility sort of ends there. But as you're sort of describing, like the shift is this, it's almost like step one of a process for a professional services company is that a client needs a team. You find a team member, you put them in, and now they've got to go do the work and you're responsible for the work that they produce, right? And you mentioned this thing called a value stream, right? So some people mightn't be familiar exactly what that is. So can you explain like when you're thinking about helping these businesses sort of evolve from, you know, the processes or how they may have operated to the way they want to operate today. Can you explain a little bit about how you go about doing that? Because again, to you, it's sort of intuitive because you're good at this stuff. But for many people who are probably thinking, well, how do I think about aligning my team about what success looks like, what we're trying to do, have a shared understanding of what great might look like for a customer experience. Can you talk a little bit about how you go about doing that with the teams? Because you've done it a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It goes back to some of the basics, even, you know, back in the day when, dare I say, I was doing some BA work. You know, what is the as-is model? So how do you operate today? What are the different functions? Where are the handoffs as well? I think handoffs are always challenging. Where are your dependencies? And, you know, what's the outcome you're trying to achieve? So you understand where, what does that flow look like through those teams and the outcome you're trying to achieve, which in this instance was, you know, ensuring that a customer was delivered, that we were meeting our commitments around delivery for the customer, the people I was speaking about previously. And then understanding where are those kind of parts where we could reduce the number of handovers by maybe consolidating everything into a one meeting where everybody gets on the same page and is able to ask the questions and understand, ah, that's what the team's working on. So finance, for example, never understands an invoice. They get an invoice, they have to review it, they have to understand whether or not people have done the hours that they've done. And had they been in the meeting to understand, oh, that's what the client, well, that's what the team's working on. You know, they've got a big delivery coming up. They're going to be working some extra time because you've been in the meeting to know that that delivery is coming up. Then you put two and two together and it removes the friction and allows you to move faster because the finance person goes, oh, yeah, I think I know that they have a big delivery coming up. Maybe that's why the team worked the weekend and want to charge us for that. Let me just ping, you know, someone and ask them if that was the case rather than, I don't know, it seems to be, why did that happen? And then, yeah, in the past, it was a siloed operation that wouldn't understand and then, you know, just didn't have the ability to connect the dots. So it's creating that understanding, communication, that exposure, transparency, maybe might be the best word, of what's happening and when. That's kind of how you'd approach it. So it doesn't have to be complex. You don't have to use fancy tools that are out there. It's just simply, what are you trying to achieve? How are you currently doing it? Where are the gaps, the blockers, or the resistance and the handovers? And how do you reduce that so that you can move more quickly and solve the problem faster with more understanding? And that's value stream, in my opinion.
What I love you using the example of is finance as well, right? Because when most people think about building businesses, they're almost like afraid to have finance in the room, right? They're like, oh my God, we're going to be like the, you know, the school teacher is going to come in and penalize us for everything, or they're afraid of, like, and ultimately it leads to misunderstanding about even what finance does. Again, it's fascinating for you to share about like the way you think about bringing all of these departments together so they have a shared understanding. So when things happen, like in your example here, where team has a delivery and they might be doing more hours than you would think they would do, and whatever, an invoice comes in and it's higher than they're expected, there's context there yet again, right? Where people can go, all right, yes, I'm aware that that's happening. It's not an anomaly, or I don't have to start to kick off a whole series of extra work, ultimately, to find out what's going on. It's like people have the context so they can make decisions quicker and like verify things easier, and then everybody goes faster. You know, like it's such a sort of powerful thing, but I think most companies lose so much sight of that because they get stuck in their function and executing on their task lists, and whatever input comes into them is, you know, there's no context with it, you know. So you've obviously been helping to say these companies like not only pivot their business model but how they approach their work, and you're also someone who's now really embracing this idea of like fractional work as well, right? Which I'm like super down for, because, you know, Nobody Studios is basically built on like people working essentially in fractional roles. Like they work on startups like 10 hours a week while it's like in the earliest stages. Or there's just so much of this opportunity as well, where people also want, if you will, like a portfolio career, or they like looking at like having a few things that they are different types of projects or assignment that they're doing at any one time, because it satisfies their intellectual curiosity. Or people just seem to be liking this more and more, right? It's just a path of life. And you've sort of gone, again, down this path from, you know, being a senior executive in a publicly listed company to like now sort of helping companies pivot their whole business models to helping now fractionally working with these teams as they're sort of starting to scale up. So first of all, like what inspired you to take this approach to doing fractional type work? Like what was the draw for you in that? And then what are some of the lessons you've learned along the way from doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I got to a point in my career where I felt like I had done so many roles in a professional services business. I'd done a practitioner role, I'd done sales, I did operations, capability building, COO, just opening new offices, chief of staff. If you name it, I'd pretty much done it. I mean, aside from coding, I didn't do any coding at Thoughtworks. But yeah, I had done so many roles. I had really good understanding of how a business works and actually how different people would have a different perspective of how a professional services consulting business worked. And one of the things I loved about being a practitioner was you'd go from one project to the next and you'd take everything you learned from that one customer before and you'd put it into the next customer and you'd be able to connect dots and be like, oh, we learned that over there and this is how you should approach it and do it. And you're always continuously learning and continuously applying that knowledge. And I wanted to be able to go and take everything I'd learned in helping grow Thoughtworks to smaller businesses who couldn't necessarily afford to have that insight or that, you know, expertise, and go and help them figure out how do they set themselves up for success early days so that they're not becoming these archaic kind of, you know, massive organizations that don't know how to pivot at all because they haven't created that agility or that nimbleness, you know, within the business from an early day. So that was the motivation behind it, kind of help people learn from my experiences. I like the idea of flexibility as well. And also I like the challenge. So whilst I really enjoyed the COO role, there's a lot of the day job that kind of has to get done. And the things that get me out of bed in the morning is going in and connecting the dots and solving the hard problems and helping clients figure out, oh yeah, that is exactly what we needed to do. Let's do that. That's the exciting stuff. So moving more towards that versus the day-to-day stuff was a motivator.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, like you say, one of the best things I certainly got out of working in those types of environments is it's like high velocity learning. And then you sort of, like you say, you get a new project every 3 to 6 months, right? So everything you learn on the one, it just compounds. But you're still learning new stuff because maybe you're in a different domain or maybe you're in a different country. There's always a new skew that you take as well as the stuff that you're learning. And I think it's one of the reasons I'm in a studio, because there's just like multiple projects going on all the time and it satisfies my, you know, curiosity to do all these multiple things at the same time and like learn different things and apply them at some level. What's been some of the fun things for you then? Like as someone who's, as you say, been internally in the company to now sort of being like fractionally helping these sort of early stage like scale-ups, what's been some of the fun things you've had to sort of learn about or unlearn, if you will, to help them be successful?
It's an interesting question. I'm currently working with a small business who have traditionally had a product that they were delivering, and there's an opportunity to expand that. And there's big visions and exciting things happening. Inbound clients are coming in all the time because they love the concepts and the product that's being sold. So there's a lot happening, but almost too much, which can be overwhelming for the founder and owner. So it's about slowing down to speed up. And again, I mentioned earlier as well, so it feels like everything kind of comes down to these few things. Is what problem are we really trying to, immediate problem are we trying to solve? And let's fix that first. Get that rhythm, get the business rhythm around, okay, we're going to take the product, we're going to expand it slightly. We're not going to expand it to the nth degree yet. We're going to expand what you currently have slightly, go to market with that, continuously test and learn. How is this working? How is it sitting with customers? And it's solving the inbound sales problem. We have too many people coming into the business wanting help, but we don't have a very distinct, this is how we recommend we help. So we're solving that problem first. And then there is a longer tail about how do we get stickiness for the client around the products that we're offering. And we don't have that fully figured out yet, but that's okay. Like, we don't have to know that today. We can go to market with this now, get the ideal client to go experiment with them, figure out how we work together to get the stickiness, and then kind of codify the stickiness with that customer. And so I think there's just been different ways. You want to be here, but actually what are the baby steps that you need to take to get there? I don't know if you remember Women in Leadership Wild at Thoughtworks. There was an exercise we used to do called Down the Mountain. So it's like, what is your big audacious goal? And I'm like, you know, climbing up some massive mountain and then going backwards. How did you achieve it? And then you get down to the bottom and you realize actually the first step is maybe walking around the block is your first step to climbing the mountain. You just have to walk around the block first. You don't have to climb the mountain yet. You know, you'll get there step by step. But knowing, yeah, getting that exposure and help from someone who has that expertise to help you break it down. or even just a coach, someone to help you think through your problems, ask the right questions, and help you figure out how to approach that journey without being overwhelmed. That's one of the things I'm doing right now, which is quite fun.
Yeah, I bet, you know, and again, it sounds so simple when you're saying it, but when you're in the sort of tornado of a business, when stuff is coming at you, oh, we've got these all exciting opportunities and two customers want to buy product A and someone wants product C, we haven't built that yet. Now we have to do everything. And it can cause more and more chaos. Like it whips up this whole sort of frenzy of activity, but not a lot of action and coordination and making things go forward in a meaningful way, right? And I think that ability, even just these examples of little tools you're sharing about helping people then realize like what is the big audacious goal that they might have and what they're trying to get to, but like decomposing that down to smaller, earlier steps. Think big, start small idea, I think is so important, right? And you know, you do need sometimes people to be able to help you just sort of see the path a little bit and trust, if you will, in the way of starting smaller and building momentum rather than trying to do everything at the same time and it becoming essentially a cluster waiting to happen, essentially, of all these moving parts, which are extremely hard to manage, right, and coordinate at the same time. But again, it's just nice to hear you talk about how you help think about doing that, because I think many businesses and scaling startups, it just feels like there's 1,000 fires going. And if you're lucky, you know, the trick is to put one out at a time rather than trying to put them all out at the same time, which is, you know, it's just never going to work.
Yeah, I think layered on top of that, though, is always then to look back at the ultimate strategy, you know, the mission and the vision of the business, and assuring that what you're doing is aligning to that as well. So it's all good to have, you know, a product and have an idea, but does it fit into the overall direction of travel? You can't lose sight of the big picture. And I'm sure you've played around with Lean Value Tree. I quite like it. It just gives you a framework to work with. But, you know, introducing that to customers around, you know, who do you want to be and what do you want to be known for? And what are those three, you know, key strategic goals you're trying to achieve? And everybody in the business understands that's the direction of travel. They know the North Star. The North Star is not revenue. The North Star has to be, you know, purpose, mission, impact led. And then everything else people do on a day-to-day basis will fit into that when they know that that's that direction of travel. I think that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, well, I literally was going to say to you, like, for you then, what are some of these steps then that you would encourage other people? Maybe if they're trying to explore this idea as someone, I'm just a big believer that this whole fractional thing is going to become bigger and bigger and bigger, especially as more people who have a lot of experience, as you say, want more flexibility in their life. You know, I think we've had tasters of that with remote work where people suddenly got this whole like different experience of what their entire life could be rather than just getting on a train and commuting or whatever it is you did every morning. So what would be your one or two tips for people who are thinking about trying to get into fractional leadership and support roles? Like, what would you suggest they try?
I fell into this in some ways through my network. I was just continuing to go out and meet people and talk about their businesses and understand their problems and potentially looking at maybe doing another big role. And what I realized was that there were so many small businesses that needed my support that if I just offered them a fraction of my time, it made sense. I think in some ways, you have to have a client base. And I was very fortunate for me that these networking conversations led to having three customers at the moment. From day one, I had all of a sudden three customers, which was a bit overwhelming, but great. So you need to be working your network. You need to be able to have that understanding that there's a need. You have to do your market research, I suppose, is what I'm saying. You have to know that there's a need in the market for what you're offering, and you'll find that out through conversation. And that's how ThoughtWorks, I remember ThoughtWorks always grew, and I use ThoughtWorks a lot as my example because I spent 18 years there, but ThoughtWorks didn't grow geographically because, oh, we want to go in and open an office in India. We grew because, you know, a client needed us to go do something in India, and we'd go for the client and go, okay, well, we'll do that in India for you. And then all of a sudden, boom, India formed. So it's about when you're growing your own business, it's like you can approach it in the I've got a product and I'm going to go market it. But I approached it from a, let's go have conversations. Ah, there's a need. I can fix that. Here's the solution. So
it is honestly fascinating. You know, I've got to have a front row seat to sort of follow, you know, your own story and the things that you've tried and done. And it's always been fascinating to me how you sort of throw yourself into all these opportunities that are often, as you said before, new to you. Maybe you've never tried before, but you just have this ability to give it a shot. And I've always admired that. So I'm grateful for you to sort of share that, you know, some of your own stories and twists and turns, and, you know, from being an operator to helping these businesses grow and shift focus right through to now fractionally doing it for numerous companies. So I'm continued to excited to see what you keep doing, Renee.
Oh, and thank you for your support as well. I must say, you know, that was one thing I probably missed out was I asked for help, right? I mean, Barry, I know you had some great experience and Nobody Studios. And so I reached out to you for advice on how you set yourself up. I reached out to my friend Dan North, who's an independent. And you go out there and you talk to people and you find out, how did you do it? What do you recommend? And yeah, I learned a lot from asking questions.
I couldn't agree more. It's all about paying it forward and sharing what you know, and everybody gets better. So yeah, great advice as ever. Thank you again for being on the show. And yeah, I look forward to having you back again in the future.
Great. Thanks, Barry. Thank you.
Hey everyone, I hope you enjoyed that show, but I'm even more delighted to share the exciting news. I've recently co-founded a new venture studio named Nobody Studios. Now, venture studio is a vehicle for the rapid creation of new companies, from ideation to acceleration and growth. And our purpose at Nobody Studios will be to de-risk pre-seed stage business ideas. We'll do this by minimizing the time, speed, and capital involved in validating truly repeatable and scalable business models before any significant venture investment. We've an audacious goal to start 100 compelling companies over the next 5 years, and who knows how many beyond that. So if you're interested in radically changing the way work is done, how products are created, companies built and funded, even democratizing the wealth creation and how returns are distributed, this could be the business for you. We're looking for talent, capital, and influence. If you wish to contribute any or all of these, just get in touch. You can follow us on nobodystudios.com, on our LinkedIn page, all the social media accounts, or simply my newsletters and what I'm sharing. We'll be launching a truly innovative crowdfunding campaign, and I'd be honored if you'd be willing to join us on this journey and become a nobody yourself.